Hey everybody, what's going on? We're here for another show tonight, the Bay Ragging Show. We're live, we're in your face, and my new friend, Mr. Ricky Warwick's going to be in your face in a few seconds. But before we talk all about when life was hard and fast, I got to tell you about my good friends over at Bombers and Sleeves. They are the lifestyle apparel brand, and they're dedicated to bringing you the war on self-doubt. This is for the bold, the fearless, and the authentic souls who never back down, and they wear it all on their sleeves. Bomb your boundaries today. ShopBombersAndSleeves.com. So, Ricky fucking Warwick, here he is. Dude, how are you doing, man? Seriously. Pleasure to talk to you.
I'm doing really good, thank you. I'm having a nice week, you know. Reaction to the album's been phenomenal, and it's lovely. I'm enjoying it. I'm soaking it all in.
Yeah, you got to be, you know, it's looking like this is going to be your top 40 solo album for yourself. So that's going to be pretty exciting.
Yeah, fingers crossed. You know, I think we'll find out the final chart positions on Friday, but we had a midweek of 15 in the UK and 20 in Germany, which is just fantastic. So, you know, we'll see what Friday brings. But either way, I'm still chuffed a bit, regardless of just how it's all gone.
That's awesome. So before we get on into that album, I got to ask, you know, we're going to focus, of course, on the album, but I got to ask this question, and I got to ask this question to your old friend and bandmate, Mr. Damon Johnson, when I interviewed him for the first time last year. You're growing up a kid, especially being from Ireland, growing up in Ireland, and fast forward and you become the front man of Thin Lizzy. Like, do you like just sit here, like, especially when you're on stage, you turn there and there's Scott playing, like, do you say to yourself, how the freak did I get here? You know what I mean? Seriously.
Every time, every day, I say that. Seriously, I'm not being you know, cheesy here. I do, because it's incredible. Lizzy, with it, you know, the soundtrack of my life as a kid growing up in Belfast in Ireland. Thin Lizzy were it, you know. So sure. To win the musical lottery and end up singing those songs, you know, I look at it the way I always say, I'm not the front man of Thin Lizzy. Phil's the front man of Thin Lizzy, and he always will be. And that's the way I want people to see the band, and that's the way that they do. When I close my eyes, I don't see me fronting the band. I see it with Phil. I just get to look after those songs, man. That's the way I look at it. I'm just getting to look after those songs and keeping those songs, you know, alive when we play live. And that's where it ends for me. Phil's a dude. I'm just looking after his stuff for him.
You know, I love the way you said that, because, like, as you were saying that, it kind of like flashed in my head, kind of like, you know, what Queen is doing with Adam Lambert, even though supposedly, you know, there's possibly going to be new music. I've heard rumors. I don't know if it's going to happen or not, but sure. I guess it's kind of like the same thing there too.
Yeah. And you know, Adam's very respectful about obviously Freddie's legacy. Look, when you have a front men as iconic as Phil and Freddie, who are just off the scale and just whatever X factor they have, there is nothing like them in their DNA. They're irreplaceable. They're irreplaceable, and it's crass to even think that you could try and replace them. So then it comes down to the music, and it's keeping the spirit of the songs that they wrote alive, and that's what it's all about. It's not about replacing somebody, because that's dumb. You can't do it. It's about keeping the music, their musical legacy alive. That's really what it boils down to, and that's how I look at it. I think Adam Lambert, you know, from what I've seen and what I've heard, does exactly the same with the Queen material.
So, you know, as I go through and get ready for the interview, like, I started, when I was going through, like, your bio, two of the things in your bio that I wanted to talk to you about, like, the one thing, like, I was ever reading, I was like, wow, like, he did the right thing. So, like, you know, you get your first electric guitar at 13, and you really focus on the music and the songwriting and playing. I think to myself, like, wow, like, when I got my first guitar, I was more focused on looking in the mirror playing Rockstar.
Listen, hey, there was plenty of that. I mean, you know, and there still is, you know. I'll still rehearse if I'm doing a set. I'll still stand in front of the mirror and play there like I did when I was 12 or 13. It's all about the shapes, man. I'm telling you, it's all about throwing shapes just as much as it is the music. No, I was totally posed in front of the mirror when I got that first guitar, because to me, it, you know, as much as it is about the music, and that is obviously the most important thing, it was all about how these guys looked. I was mesmerized by how these cats looked when I saw them on, you know, the UK Top of the Pops was our show back then, or the Old Grey Whistle Test with the great Bob Harris. then you'd see these guys and you go, how do they look like that? How can they move like this? You know, that was all part of it to me. That was just as big a part as the puzzle as it was learning the guitar. So listen, you're not alone. I was right there with you, bro.
Now, something else that I loved in your bio, and I've always wondered this for years, and I always wondered why I never saw anybody else ever bring this up, and that's, you know, you mentioned in there, as influences, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, and one of my personal favorites, Johnny Thunders and the Heartbreakers, and you never hear anybody bring up, like, hey, there was two Heartbreakers going on. What was the deal here?
You know, which one came first? There's a lot of arguments about it as well. If you actually look it up, nobody's really sure who had the Heartbreakers first. They're both just inspirational artists to me. I mean, Tom Petty's songwriting is second to none. He is the master of writing simple, direct rock and roll songs that just stick in your craw like nobody else. And I'm a sucker for that Mike Campbell Rickenbacker, you know, 12-string guitar sound that Roger McGinn started with the Birds. I just love all that. I just, you know, so Tom Petty for sure. And then, you know, Johnny Thunders was just a fabulous, beautiful mess. You know, he was just all over the place, but insanely talented at the same time. It had a look and had a style and could write some killer songs. You know, sadly, he was too much of a mess sometimes, and I think that's why he's maybe no longer with us anymore, you know, which is such a shame. But he left some killer songs, and you know, with his time in the New York Dolls, they were obviously the instigators, along with bands like MC5 and Iggy of punk rock that we know and love so well. Those guys kicked it all off, you know.
I'm actually, like, when it came out a few weeks ago about the their nomination for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, I was blown away. I was never expecting the New York Dolls to even get looked at for Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Well, these bands should be, and they should be in there. The same when Thin Lizzy got nominated last year. It was last year, I think it was. You know, and they didn't get in, and that's criminal. I'm not just saying that because of my connection, but I'm saying that as a fan. There's bands that just should mandatorily be in there. It shouldn't even be put to a vote. If you're going to have something like that, there's bands that defined where we are at this moment in time and have contributed to rock and roll music that should just automatically be put into that Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. It shouldn't be down to a vote or a decision. That, I mean, to me, that's just, it doesn't make sense. My opinion.
I think there's many people out there agreeing with you, believe me. Now everybody knows you. One of your best friends is Joe Elliott from Def Leppard.
Yeah.
And I seen recently an article where you talked about how Joe is like a big sounding board for you to play stuff off him for music and all. And I thought to myself, I wonder if it goes both ways. Do you get to be a sounding board for Joe as well?
I think absolutely. Joe will send me stuff that he's working on to get my opinion. So I think it works both ways. Look, I started off as a huge, you know, Def Leppard fan. I remember going to see them play on the Hysteria tour in 1988 in Edinburgh in Scotland. And right before the Almighty signed their first record deal. And one of the reasons I bought my first white Les Paul custom guitar was of Steve Clark and Steve Jones. You know, those two guys just look great playing a white Les Paul custom. So before I even knew Joe Def Leppard were a band that I loved, I just thought they wrote brilliant hard rock songs. And Joe is a very underrated guy. A lot of people don't know. Joe's an extremely good guitar player, extremely good piano player, has an encyclopedia knowledge of music. You know, when I was still living in Dublin, you know, I would be hanging out at Joe's 4 or 5 nights a week. We watched the soccer, we'd hang out, but it was music. And he's, you know, insane record collection. We'd be up to 5, 6 in the morning, you know. We'd be playing the bootlegs of the Mott the Hoople gig that nobody'd ever heard, and Joe had on, you know, managed to get on vinyl.
That's awesome.
We'd be breaking it down and talking about it. Or I remember one night sitting one night in Vegas after I opened for them on the tour, and we sat up till 5 or 6, me, Joe, and Saf, talking about the band Sparks till the sun came up.
Wow.
Just getting in, you know, those guys are still that passionate about their music. They don't take any of it for granted. Joe is like a mentor to me. I trust his opinion. Don't always agree with it, but I know he's going to be brutally honest. And the reason the guy sold, you know, over 100 million records, he's done that. There's a reason that's happened. And not just Joe, everybody in that band, never forgotten where they're from and where they're at and the journey, the roads they took along the way. It hasn't been easy, obviously, with Steve passing away and, you know, Rick's accident and everything. They've not had it easy. Sure. But they're the most down to earth. They've been so good to me over the years, not just Joe, but the whole band, and the belief that they've had in me has done wonders for my confidence as an artist. And that's something I can never repay. I mean, just, I can't say enough good things about those guys.
That's awesome. So the new album, it's actually, yeah, the funny thing is we were supposed to do this interview back in December and I had to reschedule and, you know,
we're here now.
We're back. Yeah. We're here now and the album's actually out, so it's even better.
Yeah. Yeah, I know what I'm talking about. You asked me in December, I'd still be making up my mind what the songs are about. I've got it done now.
So it's funny. It's called When Life Was Hard and Fast, which is a great title. But I'm thinking to myself, are you saying now that life is slow and easy?
Not at all. I'm certainly, you know, anybody that knows me, I'm not somebody that lives in the past at all. You know, I think the past is there to be learned from, cherished, remembered, and help you on the road going forward. I think sometimes you have to look to the past to move forward. And I certainly adhere to that. You know, I didn't come up with the title. My good friend Sam Robinson, who wrote the lyrics for that song, who I've co-written quite a few songs with, actually sent me the words. And it was about him and I both growing up in Belfast when we were kids in the 70s and 80s, our dreams, our aspirations. So it was about us back then and the lifestyle that we had, thinking about the future. And now the future's here. We're kind of, you know, so it's kind of flipping backwards and forwards. We're kind of going, okay, you know, we were lucky ones. Our dreams came true and we got what we wanted out of life, what we perceived and what we thought about. We were lucky enough to get it. Sadly, some people didn't. And we lost some people along the way and we lost some friends along the way. And it's a really positive song. It's really about living and living for the moment. Not forgetting your roots, not forgetting your culture or where you came from, shaped you into the person that you are today, and that's why you can move forward.
Do you think the whole album is like based on that, like your whole roots?
No, I don't think it's a theme. I think every song has a different topic and a different story behind it. But to me, like you just said, and thank you for saying it, when Sam sent me those lyrics through, it was like, boom, that's the album title. I'm done. I don't need to look worry about get coming up because that's it right there. And then opened a lot of ideas for me with the whole album cover design, with the old race that used to happen around my grandfather's farm. I suddenly thought, well, that's going to work really well. So suddenly all these roads opened up as soon as I got those words. And that was it. But every song on the record there's not a theme. There's not... You know, it's not like a concept running through it, if that's what you're getting at. Every song's got an individual meaning.
Gotcha. Now, something that was really cool you actually shared out, I think it was yesterday, on social media. Your favorite football team shared out about your album being released. I'm thinking to myself, holy crap. Like, that would be like for me, the Philadelphia Eagles sharing out about my show. Like, come on. Like, how mind-blowing was that?
It's amazing. You know, I've been involved with the club. The club is doing really, really well at the moment, which is amazing. But we had a couple of years there where it looked like the club might go to the wire. There was certainly some dark times. And I did a show every year, every Christmas for about 3 or 4 years, I would come back. And there's a great setup. The club's called Glentoran. They have a thing called the Glentoran Community Trust, where it's a charity organization that they set up to help fund the team and help fund the kids and buy soccer cleats and strips for the kids and all that kind of stuff. And just in the community. And every year I would do a show back home in Belfast and give the proceeds of the show to the community trust just to try and help the club come along. So they're more than a football team. It's a way of life for me with Glentoran. And I love them to bits. And they've been so supportive of me. In return, they've returned the favor. And, you know, I didn't even know they were going to do that. You know, it was Sam goes, here, check this out. Because my buddy Sam's a supporter too. He's like, have you seen this on the website? And I was like, oh man, that's amazing, you know? So like that's I said, true. You know, when the football team that you support turns around and supports you, it's something else. And those are the little things that really, really hit you, you know, really hit home when you see stuff like that. It's lovely.
Sure. Absolutely. Now, why a solo album now? Why not Black Star Riders? Was it just guitars? What was the part of the pandemic that put this in motion?
Well, we should have, should be Black Star, right? Well, we put another State of Grace out in September 2019, and I was thrilled about it. I firmly believe it's the best Black Star Riders record we've made, and we managed to get over to Europe. We got a good 6-7 week tour in of Europe, took us up to Christmas, January, February, boom, we're in lockdown. Last year was all supposed to be Black Star Riders touring another State of Grace. We were supposed to be going all over the world, you know, States, South America, Asia, you know, all over Europe, all the festivals. We'd you know, over 100 shows booked, and obviously they just went away because of the pandemic. Now, the album, When Life Is Hard and Fast, was already done. I recorded that in 2019, so it was in the can.
Oh, wow.
So I was sitting on that, and we had planned already to release it in early 2021. That was the plan, before the pandemic came along.
Okay.
It didn't make any sense when the pandemic did hit to move the album forward into 2021 and put it in the middle of a pandemic just because Black Star Riders were off the road. That would have been crazy. So we stuck with the original date, hoping that when February came around in 2021, I could actually get out there. Things would be better and play some shows. Sadly, we're not quite there yet, as we all know, but things are getting better. But, you know, that's just the, we just stuck to the plan, basically. With the record,
moving it up, thinking like, all right, if I move it up, maybe we can end up possibly, you know, like, we didn't know at the time, but, you know, maybe back on the road this year.
Well, maybe I might get out. I'm hoping that I'll get out towards the end of the year, the way it's looking pretty good for that. No, I mean, again, then you're moving back into, you know, we want to make another Black Star Riders records. We decided that, you know, there was no point going back out after 2 years and sort of rebooting another State of Grace. We decided we'd just move on with Black Star Riders and work on a new record, which we're doing. I mean, it's all scheduling. You know, I have a wonderful management company that make great plans for me. This is what you're doing for the next 2 years. And obviously, you know, you have to be very sure that things don't overlap. And you know, Black Star Riders, Ricky Warwick isn't eating into Black Star Riders time because, you know, as I keep saying, Black Star Riders is a priority here and is the day job.
Absolutely. Now, how about, like, was that even more frustrating though? Because it was recorded, you know, going on a year and a half, 2 years now, and you're sitting on it and you're waiting. And then you're like, there's nothing going on in 2020. I'm putting out this music. Like,
well,
that must be crazy.
You know, no, I mean, because there's a great satisfaction of knowing that you've got an album in the can and it's done. And you don't have to worry about it, and it's recorded, and and I'm extremely happy with it. So it wasn't a case of like, oh man, you know, I can go back and tweak this and change that. That's not really how I roll. The albums for me is you're capturing the time in a moment, and that's how it is at that time, and then you move on. I mean, last year's been incredibly busy for me. I mean, I've done an online show every month. I've been writing for a few other people. I've written, you know, the next Black Star Riders album. I've written the next solo album, which I've already demoed. So I've kept myself busy and been as productive as I can be because, like you said, there's nothing we can do about this pandemic. It's bigger than any of us. So you got to – acceptance is the first part of it. Once you go, all right, this is shit. This is really going to suck, but what can I do? How can I get through this? How can I keep myself busy and keep myself positive? That's not to say there hasn't been a few days where I've woken up like, you know, going, oh, really? We're still the groundhog day, you know? But – but it's been okay. It's been all right. I've been lucky. You know, I've been able to be productive, which is, I'm thankful for that.
Me personally, like, I've kind of enjoyed this whole pandemic just because of what you said. I think I've been the most productive I've ever been in my life in the last year.
You know, listen, I've always said for years, because I've toured so much and I work really hard and I love it. I love what I do. I'm not complaining about that. But I remember sort of saying to my wife, you know, I'm going to take one year. I'm just going to take a year off. I'm going to just take a step back, not go on the road, and just take a year off, be home for all the birthdays, be home mm-hmm. for all the anniversaries, be home for the Thanksgivings and everything that we have, you know, in the States. And I said, I'm going to do it. Of course, I never did it because I love working. Obviously, the last sort of 13, 14 months, that's been enforced. And I've done it now, and it's been great. It's been lovely to be home for the birthdays. It's been great to spend time with the family all the time. But you know what? I'm ready to fucking go on tour again. I've done it now. It's out of my system. You know what I mean? It may have been enforced on me. I love my family in the bits, but being on the road, that's what I do. That's part of who I am, you know? And I think to have that taken away from me when I'm not ready to stop doing it. It's difficult, you know? It's difficult to get your head around it.
Do you think that might work the opposite for some people in the business? Like, they might say, like, you know what? Like, I just want to stay home now. I don't want to go back on the road.
Yeah, I mean, certainly some people might learn it, you know, it's okay to say no. Mm-hmm. You know, it's okay to, you know, to take your foot off the gas a little bit. I've certainly learned a lot from it as well. I think it's made me analyze quite a few things, and maybe there's certain things that now that maybe I'd have like, okay, I'll do it. Yes, no problem. I'm your guy. I'm like, you know what? You know, I'm okay. You know, I might say my daughter's got something going on this week. I might just, you know, is it worth me missing that to go and do this? I don't know. But I definitely do know that with, you know, I have really missed touring, and that's something I'm not ready to stop doing ever. You know, I mean, I want to keep touring as long as I physically can, because I love playing so much.
Sure. Now, how about, like you said, like with the writing? So, I mean, you've written the Black Star Riders album, you got new solo stuff you're writing. How do you distinguish between the two? Like, when you're writing, you're like, all right, well, I'm keeping this one. I'll let the guys have this one. You know what I mean?
It's my decision to make. That's what the best thing about it is. I mean, I can't separate myself from myself. I think that's what you're getting at there. That's the problem. It's a great problem to have. It's a gut instinct. I follow my gut. If I'm working on something, I kind of go, I can hear what, you know, Christian and Scott and Robbie and Chad are going to do with this. This is going to be epic. This is going to be a Black Star Riders thing. And I'll maybe only go so far with it till I get their input. You know, I might send it up to Christian, up to his place up in Oregon. He's got a studio up there, and he'll send me something back, and we start tuning and throwing like that, and then the other guys come in. And that's how it really evolves with Black Star Riders. The solo stuff, I just work on it. I just go, you know, I kind of go, well, and again, I think Black Star Riders has a style and a sound that I'm very proud of. And I think people expect that from us, and we want to give it to them because I think that's what Black Star Riders means to them. And so we don't want to deviate too far out of that lane, as it were. But obviously with the solo stuff, you can do what the hell you want. I mean, you know, all the cards are on the table. You can go anywhere, you can have whoever you want play on it. It's the total freedom to do that, and I'm blessed to be able to do both. But yeah, I mean, I've had the raised eyebrow from Scott Gorham. He does this cool thing. We've been on the tour bus, and I've been playing him a couple of solo songs like that. You know, he'll sit there and he'll kind of go, oh yeah. He goes, I'm like, hey, buddy, he goes, why didn't you keep that one for us? And I'll be like, but I think the good thing about it is the guy, I think the guys in BSR know that I'm not going to turn up to a writing session with nothing, go, oh, sorry, guys, I've used all my good material on my own stuff. I mean, I would never, ever do that. If that was the case, you know, I wouldn't do a solo record. So, I mean, they know I'm always going to turn up armed with ideas and riffs and lyrics and stuff, so. So far, so good.
You mentioned about having, you know, people appear on your solo record, and you had a special person appear on this one, your daughter, which is a duet with you.
Yeah. Yeah, she was the most difficult one to get to do anything on it than all the other special guests. There's a lot of bribery involved in that one. it was amazing. You know, I wrote the song for her and recorded it with Keith, and I just, you know, at this point my daughter's name is Pepper. She was really getting into playing music herself, and we could hear her up in her room singing. And you know, I turned to my wife since she was about 7 or 8. I went, you know, she's got a great voice. You know, she's really has something going on there, and she's a bit like sort of you and I were talking. She's up in the room singing in front of the mirror for hours on end, playing her little keyboard or playing her ukulele or playing her guitar, and it's great to see that. And I just was like, well, hey, kiddo, this song's about you. Why don't you come in and sing in the studio? And she was 11 at the time when we recorded it a couple of years ago. And she came in, and we had a great day hanging out in the studio. And it was a real proud dad moment just to have her on there and the whole thing. Of course, now she's 13. She wants absolutely nothing to do with it whatsoever. You know, she's like, oh, God, it's so embarrassing. Really? You're so uncool. I can't believe I did that. You know?
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
But I mean, she sounds, I mean, honest to God, like when I heard her, I was like kind of like this angel on dad's shoulders singing along with her.
You know, she did it in one take. She went in, and she'd never been in a studio before, and we put the headphones on her. I'd played her the song a couple of times at home and told her the part. I mean, not excessively. I just ran through it with her a couple of times. She's like, all right, I got it, Dad. And she came in, and she was. It was a little bit scary because I think I remember being going into studio for the first time when I was 14 with my first band to do demos. I'm being so nervous and so intimidated by everything. It probably ruined the demo session because I was so, you know, just nervous and overwhelmed.
Sure.
Nothing. She just went in and, okay, no problem. Boom. One take. That's cool. Thanks, Dad. Can we go to Starbucks? You know? You know, so it was almost like I was the one that was a sort of gibbering, nervous wreck when she was in there, you know? And she was just like, yeah, I've done it, no problem. But like I said, I'm happy that she's found music. We certainly haven't pushed any of our kids into any direction they want to go. We're very much about letting them find their own way. And there's always music on, there's always music on in the house 24/7. So, you know, I think that way they've been consciously or unconsciously aware of it. But she's really, really seems to be immersing herself in it right now, which is lovely. And hopefully, maybe she'll go on and do something. Maybe she won't.
What'd she think of Dad's music? Is she a fan of Dad's music, or is she kind of like you said, Dad, you're so uncool?
You know, I think secretly she likes it. She's just that age where all parents are uncool at the minute, and we're annoying, and we get in the way. And can you drop me around the corner so my friends don't see you and all that kind of stuff. You know? We were the same. She's at that age, you know. But of course, you know, I think secretly she's. I'd like to think she's very proud of what her old man's doing. I hope so.
Absolutely. Now you had some guest appearances, like we talked about at, you know, Joe Elliott's on this album.
Yeah.
Dizzy Reed from Guns N' Roses, Andy Taylor, Duran Duran. Was there anybody else that like you really wanted to get on the album but just couldn't get it synced up?
No, I mean, not really. Those were the people that sprang to mind, because I guess they're the people that I, you know, they're close friends. I'm always talking to those group of people, and I've been working with them, you know, on some of their stuff as well as them working with me. You know, I've been working with Andy Taylor on some songs for his solo record. I've been writing with him for his solo record, which is coming out later this year. You know, Dizzy from Guns, I did a track with Dizzy for his solo album that came out a couple of years ago. So there's that kind of incestuous thing going on there. And, you know, the songs aren't written with the guests in mind. It's just a case of when you do, again, we're doing the solo record. Hey, wouldn't it be great to get Luke from Thunder to come in and play a solo on this? And you're not going to piss off the guitar player because there's no guitar player to piss. I mean, it's me and it's Keith, you know. And, you know, you're going to be, that's my job. I'm a guitar player in the band. How do you get somebody, you know? So that's what's kind of cool about it. And I'm just blessed that these people are my friends, and even more the fact that they're so extremely talented, and I'm a big fan of their music and what they do. So why not bring them in?
Does it become a thing like you said, like, you know, you did stuff on their solo record, or does it become a thing like you just kind of like look at each other and see and go, you owe me one?
Yeah, I think that's the way it is, because nobody's taking a penny. We're mates. Nobody's going, sure. Okay, you know, I came and sang in that. I want my session fee. That'll be $2,000 or whatever you want. It's none of that. It's mates. You know, we're mates. It's like, hey, bro, you come and sing on this? Yeah. You come and sing on my record next, you know, when I do it next month? Yeah. You know, it's as easy as that. It's as chilled as that. And, you know, the beauty of this with the internet now, you know, geography doesn't matter. It doesn't matter where you are. Everybody's got a little home studio. And, you know, I just returned the favor with Luke from Thunder. Luke's working on some solo stuff, and I did some backing vocals for him on a track. You know, he sent it over to me because Luke's over in the UK. Dizzy from Guns was able to come in the studio because he lives here in LA, so we're able to have Dizzy. So physically, it's better. I love it when the people are in the studio and you can interact and see them play. That's magical. But, you know, obviously, with costs involved and geography, this just makes it so much easier when you're doing that kind of thing.
So how about one thing I saw you were doing too, you were working with a website, Magic Glue. Seems like you were like putting some of your stuff up, you know, where people actually can play with you. And I guess it was a raise, kind of like a, what was the one that screwed everybody over? The fundraising site a few years back. Oh my God.
Oh, Pledge. Pledge Music.
Pledge Music. Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it something similar or something like that?
It's similar-ish. You know, Pledge Music was basically a bit like the Kickstart campaign that we have here in the States. And sadly, it went under and ripped off a ton of musicians for a lot of money, which was just, we'll not even go there. It was so disgusting. Yeah. And I personally know a lot of artists that just got completely lost, you know, lost their soul on it. You know, they're making these records and they were owed thousands and didn't get, and it's just terrible. Luckily, I used the campaign and got in and out before it that happened. I was very, very lucky that I wasn't a victim of that. But Musical.ly is, it's a site where you can offer exclusive stuff. I didn't use it to fund the record because I'm signed to Nuclear Blast, which is amazing. So they funded this album, which is brilliant. But you can do special VIP stuff like signs, anything you want on it. You know, sign stuff. You know, get up, play during the sound check, lyric sheets. You know, anything, really, anything you want to do to coincide with the record coming out.
Nice. Now also too, you included on this your acoustic unplug covers, where we get to hear Britney Spears cover and the Dead or Alive cover, some other classics. How did the Britney Spears thing come about? I gotta know.
Fun, you know. I mean, look at me. Look at the state of me. Who'd think that this guy would cover a Britney Spears song?
Yeah. And
it's, you know, it's fun. At the end of the day, it's the business of show, you know. It's not show business. It's the business of show. It's about entertaining people and putting a smile on people's faces and making them feel something. The real story behind that, again, going back to my youngest daughter, Pepper, she loved that song, you know, when she was about 6 or 7 years old. And that album was recorded back in 2014, because it was part of the Pledge campaign for my last record. And I learned it just to sing it to her. Simple as that. I just learned it on the guitar so I could sing it to her and we could have fun singing it. And I just was like, oh, hang on a minute. This is kind of cool. This song really works. Listen, I'm a sucker for really good pop music, really good, well-written, crafted pop songs. I'm all about it, you know? I mean, my record collection would probably scare some people to death if they saw what was in it. They just wouldn't expect it. But that's what I love about music, you know? And so I just thought, this works, and this works when you break it down on acoustic guitar. This actually sounds pretty fucking cool, you know? So I did this thing for the people that were part of the Pledge. Every couple of weeks, I'd sit in the stairwell in my house and just do an acoustic cover. And this went really well. My manager said to me, you should go in a studio and just record a bunch of these acoustically. And we'll give it away as a very limited edition with part of the Pledge campaign for the last record. So I went in, did that. Sure enough, that we only did 500 copies, real limited edition. Okay. And then when we finished When Life Was Hard and Fast, the Nuclear Blast, the record label, like, you know, as they always do, you got any bonus material, you got any demos, you got any extra tracks? My manager was like, hey, hang on a minute. He said, we've got the album. We've got the Stairwell Troubadour album that's never been publicly released properly before. Why don't we give that away as a bonus disc with the album? And I was like, yeah, you know, bring it on. No problem. So, yeah. And it's just, you know, the songs on there, I think people would expect me to do, like, you know, Johnny Cash and the Tom Waits a la Ramones cover of I Don't Want to Grow Up. You know, Elvis, I'm a big fan of. So there's an Elvis song on there. You know, the band, the Bottle Rockets, who I think are a criminally underrated band. I covered one of their songs. But, you know, Duke, Dead or Alive, man, that song, going into clubs in the late 80s and 90s, you know, going to the sort of goth clubs in Glasgow with my girlfriend, and that would be playing, you know, and I just loved that. I just thought, what a great song, you know? So,
yeah.
Why not?
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So you mentioned earlier, too, you've been doing like a monthly live stream. Is that going to be like the plan right now if you get back out on the road?
That's been lovely to be able to do that and have something to focus on every month and rehearse and work towards it and connect with everybody. You know, even though it's through a computer, you're still playing live. You can still see their comments coming in. You know, of course it doesn't replace playing live, but it's actually not a bad little substitute. And I've really enjoyed doing them. They've been really, really good for me. I mean, I've learned a bunch of songs. I did, you know, I'll try and change the subject every month. One month I might do a Black Star Rider show, 1 month a solo show, 1 month just covers, 1 month almighty shows, an almighty show of songs. So I'm revisiting songs maybe that I've never played live before, or, you know, ones I never would have thought worked on an acoustic. Certainly some of the Almighty stuff, I'm like, well, you know, I never dreamed that would work on an acoustic guitar. So it's been it's been fun. And again, it's something that's kept me focused and, you know, kept me going.
That's awesome.
Thank you.
Well, Ricky, thank you for doing this. Where's
the best place
to send everybody to get the album?
RickyWarrick.com. You know, all the links are there. I'm all over social media. You know, all the album's up on all everywhere you'd expect it to be. You know, you can download it, you can stream it, you can purchase it. There's, like I said, there's deluxe CDs, there's vinyl. I think there's even a cassette version available on the Music Glue site if anybody wants to go real old school. Confuse your kids. It's funny, I got one sent to me the other day, and it was sitting on the dining room table, and my other daughter, my stepdaughter Zoe, came in, and she's 20, and she goes, "Oh, cool, a pack of cards." And I went, "No, it's a cassette." And the look of like, "Why are you really? How old are you? You know, what are you? You know?" And it was hilarious. So, yeah,
that's funny.
Yeah. So, you know, even just get a cassette and confuse the hell out of your kids, because they'll not know what it is.
Imagine if it was an 8-track.
Wow, I know. Yeah, I'm not that old. Come on.
I am. Too funny. Ricky, thanks again so much, man. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, bro.
To the top 40. I can feel it this week. You got it.
Thank you. Let's hope so. Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Take care, man.
Thanks, man. Bye-bye.
Bye.